If you want to delve into Ivy Hoops, you've come into the right place. This is Inside Ivy Hoops, Ivy Hoops Online podcast. I am Mike Tony, editor of Ivy Hoops Online. A lot to get to in recapping a pretty jam-packed weekend of Ivy action and a little bit of extracurricular stuff, too. Joining me, expert IHO writer Richard Kent to make sense of it all. Richard, how are you?
Good. How are you, Mike?
Excellent, excellent. So let's start with what was really the marquee matchup last weekend on the men's side. Yale and Brown matching up. I think it was largely what we wanted. It was a competitive game in Providence. And my takeaway from Yale's 70-67 win at the Piz, Yale's defensive effort really seems to be kind of flying under the radar a bit. The way Yale went about keeping Desmond Cambridge in tow, certainly Trey Fills has been one of the best defenders in the Ivy League for a long time. It was remarkable what they were able to do. Cambridge had just 7 points on 3-for-19 shooting. What were your takeaways?
He was 3-for-18 from the field and 1-for-9 in threes. And Phils did an excellent job on him. And I thought Cambridge attempted some really difficult shots that, once he missed 4 or 5 in a row, he just started to attempt some really tough shots. But I agree, Yale's defense is underrated. We all know about the rebounding, one of the best rebounding teams, if not the best rebounding team in the Ivy League. But even with that, they only out-rebounded Brown 42-39.
Yeah, it's Yale's not quite as offensive rebounding oriented and is playing at a faster pace than it has in the past. Not saying that it's any less potent of a team as we've seen under James Jones, because I don't think it is. I think Yale is certainly out there at the top of the league, and even if it hasn't garnered as much attention as of late as the Pens and the Princetons for their ups and downs. But it strikes me as having a slightly different feel as a team than, let's say, the approach certainly on the offensive end as the let's say the NCAA tournament edition of the Elis from 2016. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. There's no Mekhi Mason, and I have had the debate with so many people about comparing that team with this team, and I really think on a lot of levels that Paul Atkinson may be the X factor that may make this team ultimately in March a bit better than the Sherrod, Mason, Justin Sears team. I mean, those three, of course, with Oney, with Atkinson, and with Bruner. And right now, I give the edge to the NCAA winning team over Baylor. In March, I may be singing a different song.
And on the women's side, it was a flip script. Brown, 86 points over a pretty good Yale defense. But then again, we've seen what Shayna Mehta can do for quite a while now in the Ivy League. 37 points on 10-for-19 shooting. Brown had 4 players in double figures. Yale was held to 29% shooting from 3. What were your takeaways from a pretty strong Brown performance against Yale, these being the past 2 number 4 seeds in the Ivy League tournament on the women's side?
Well, 2 things. I spoke to Gabby Nelson, who is a non-starter at Yale, but she is the captain of the team, and she said it was all about one word: turnovers. Yale turned the ball over way too much, and Brown capitalized on those turnovers. But in that series, in the history of that series, the home team has won a disproportionate amount of time. So I am looking for Yale to bounce back this Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock at John Lee Amphitheater and win that game.
Do you think that one of those two, Brown or Yale, that that's going to be the number four seed race again?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously I've penned in Princeton and no pun intended, Penn and Harvard, certainly with a couple of really great national wins. The win over Cal is an eye opener. So I would say that it'll come down to Yale and Brown, and Yale really wants it badly, given the fact that the tournament will probably have a 1 year stint at John Lee Amphitheater. So this would be a great time to be in the tournament.
Indeed. And I think folks, perhaps because it's been at the plush of the past two seasons, are forgetting that the tournaments are going to be at John J. Lee Amphitheater and not factoring in the advantage that that's going to be in thinking about what the outcomes of that tournament might be. Certainly, Yale, one of the relatively few programs that has a good shot to get teams in based on past history and present performance this season.
I think the JLA has a much bigger impact on the Yale men than it does on the Yale women. Even if the tourney, even if Yale is a tourney, the women are a tourney team, I don't know that they're going to win the tourney. I think that being at home may be the plus advantage, the 3 to 5 point plus advantage that the Yale men might need to stave off who I think, I think that we're going to see Yale win it regular season. And I think 12-2 is going to win it. And I think we're going to see Brown and Penn and Harvard fighting it out for second and third. That would lead to the conclusion of a Yale Penn Yale Harvard final. And being at home is a huge advantage.
Makes sense to me. It's a pretty good week for Penn in the Big Five, men and women both beating Temple. That's not something that happens too often for the red and blue. Penn getting its second win over Fran Dunphy's Temple Owls in his 13 soon to be wrapped up years. In North Philly, Penn with 42 second half points. Actually, Temple outscored him in the second half, but a great offensive effort overall for Penn in what will likely be known as the Cuba game for a while. What's your take on Penn? A bit of a roller coaster they've been on lately. Big Five champs and yet 0-2 in Ivy play. Do you get a feel for where they are right now?
They're getting healthier, and it's all about Penn getting healthier. I was at the Princeton game at Jadwin, and clearly Max Rothschild was, maybe at 40% from what I could tell, and that was a huge difference maker in that game. And as Penn gets healthier, obviously they're going to get better. Winning the Big Five is huge, but that doesn't necessarily translate into winning the Ivy. But Penn will be a far better team in February than it was in December, in early January, excising, of course, the Villanova win.
Indeed. And Rothschild only had 5 minutes in the win at Temple, but I think that goes to show, first of all, having him on the uptick is huge, both on the court and I would imagine from a kind of a team state of the team standpoint, it's good to know that your guys are there and that they can contribute close to 100%. So, you've got the great thing about Penn under Steve Donohue is they're able to get these performances out of nowhere, it seems, from the outside looking in, from players who previously weren't contributing much of anything, whether it was, Sam Jones or Jackson Donohue in past years. Dev Goodman at Columbia comes to mind, and of course, Cuba at Temple. this past week. It just seems like Steve Donaghy's able to get a great deal out of lineups that previously, you know, would have seemed inconceivable. We get a lot of lineups out of Harvard sometimes that are a bit perplexing, and occasionally some performances there, but I don't think performances there that surprise, but Penn is above and beyond when it comes to that, in my mind, getting those performances in key spots. Moving on, looking at this weekend, we've got, of course, the other half of the travel partner back-to-backs. On the women's side, we've got Brown at Yale, Cornell at Columbia, Harvard at Dartmouth. And, of course, the men's side, we've got Brown and Yale, and that's tomorrow at 7 o'clock Friday, followed by Dartmouth and Harvard, Cornell and Columbia, and Penn in its final Big Five tilt of the year against St. Joseph's. We've got, you know, it's, you would think a lot of these are going to turn out to be home and homes. Are there any that you think are most advantageous for the road team this weekend?
Well, you know, I'm in a contest with you, Mike, and I am really reluctant to give away my house secrets.
Yeah, you and I have tied a couple times at the top.
We have, and I mean, I'd hate to see tonight be the breaker for me, but notwithstanding that, I think we'll see. Even though I think Jim Ingles is really doing a great job, not a whole lot. Some people say that the loss of Mike Smith was addition by subtraction. I don't agree with that.
No, I don't either.
Right, he's got not a great lineup. He took Rutgers into overtime. Rutgers has beaten Nebraska. They've beaten Ohio State this year, but I think Cornell will win.
Yeah, I think that one's going to come down to the wire again. Cornell with 2 1-point victories over Columbia at Neumann the past two seasons. Of course, Cornell hopes they don't have the same result at Levian as they did last season when they got handled pretty decisively up there or down there from their perspective, I guess. But we'll see. I mean, I think it's, I don't know. I guess I kind of asked that because I think the home teams will hold, certainly on the men's side. I'm pretty intrigued by, on the women's side, Harvard at Dartmouth. Dartmouth, after not scoring at all in the first quarter, Deities actually made a pretty respectable comeback in that game. Two good defenses going at each other. So that intrigues me as one of the presumed top four, possibly being vulnerable in that game up in Hanover, that being Saturday at 5 o'clock. The ESPN3 game of the week on the women's side, of course, Brown at Yale. That's a very intriguing matchup, as it should be. I think you've said Yale will return the favor against a potent Brown offense, and I'd be inclined to agree, but we'll see. Big news to take a starkly a different tone here. Standout Princeton guard Devin Kennedy, of course, was arrested this past Friday, early Friday morning. All over the reports, Trentonian, NJ.com, got national attention, unfortunately. Following an alleged confrontation with customers and police at a local Wawa, and the men's basketball program in response suspended the standout guard. This is not It's not the Devin Kennedy, I don't think, most folks in the Ivy sphere know, right, Richard?
I poked around with some people at Jadwin, and Devin Kennedy is beloved. He is, the phrase that most people use is just a really good kid. First guy in the gym, last guy out of the gym, gets along with everybody, and it's completely out of character. And I don't know what the result is going to be, either as or from the perspective of an Ivy follower or as a lawyer myself. I mean, clearly he's got to go through the judicial system. I mean, I think the judicial system will end up giving him a slap on the wrist and something in Connecticut, at least, that we call accelerated rehabilitation. He's basically stay out of trouble for a year and your record gets erased. But of course, he's got to go through the Princeton board of review as well. And I think we know, looking back, I believe it was the last year, that Princeton, I think, cut the cord on their swimming team for the entire season after an incident, obviously not this type of incident. Princeton could look extremely harshly on this, and he may be gone for the entire season. I mean, my hunch is it's going to take a while to wind its way through both the judicial system and the Princeton system. And I think if he ever sees playing, and it would be in the Ivy tourney.
Yeah, in these situations, sometimes folks jump to, well, you know, how do you replace him as a player on the court? But first and foremost, the concern in my view here is how does he bounce back as a person from this, whatever led up to it, however this came to be. You know, the concern is how does he bounce back from this and move forward. I know his last tweet before this happened was a pretty cool post with him with some very young fans signing and giving shoes away after Princeton's huge win at the Palestra, and that's the image that you know I'd take away, and I'd would ask folks take away from what seems to, as you say, be a really good kid, and hopefully he bounces back. On the court, on a much lesser issue, though, how do you see Princeton trying to go about the what may be kind of a folly to even term it this way, but to try to replace him on the court?
He's not replaceable. Certainly, you know, sitting towards the end of January, he's simply not. He's the leading scorer in the Ivy League. He's, you know, he can hit three or four threes in a row. I remember a game at Jadwin last year against Yale when he went 6 for 7 from three. He can be an electric player, and I had the Ivy power ratings before this happened with Yale 1, and this is after the two Princeton wins over Penn, Princeton 2, Brown 3, and Penn 4. Of course, I didn't know that Aiken would be coming back, and Towns might be coming back soon as well. Right now, I would see it at Yale 1, Penn 2, Harvard 3, and Princeton and Brown fighting it out right now for four, but we don't know. I mean, Princeton plays a weird game on Sunday. They play Wesley College. I don't even know what Wesley College is. So that game, they're going to win by 40. That game is meaningless. So we're really not going to know a whole lot about Princeton until next weekend.
No, we're in that fall exam of lull that Princeton has to go through every year, where we just kind of forget about them a bit. And
I think that goes away, Mike, this year. I think this is the last year.
Is that this is the last year for that?
I believe so. Yeah, I went to the to Mitch's press conference after they beat Penn at Jadwin, and I believe that's what he said.
Well, the sooner the better. I think all can agree on that end. Richard Kent, thank you so much for imparting such such characteristically insightful knowledge for us. A lot to see how this plays out on a lot of different fronts. But thanks so much for coming on.
I just fear that I may have handed you a tidbit that's going to make me a one-game loser at the end of the year.
Well, there's always that chance, Richard. Let's hope so. Thanks, Richard.
Take care.
All right.